Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers, and I'm just so delighted that you're able to be there, listen to me, and we can share things between the two of us. And there is another one who would like to share with you.
Who's that, Carolyn?
Dr. Richard Presser.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening, Carolyn.
Good evening. Well, I'm so glad you didn't hang me out to dry. I figure someday he's not going to answer.
I don't know why you would think that of me, really.
Because you like to play games.
Unlike you, of course.
I know. I would never play a game with anyone.
Never.
Never. Oh, we're always down to earth here. The truth and nothing but the truth.
Absolutely.
Tonight, I think, is going to be a special show because we're going to be bringing forth information that, first of all, you may or may not know about, and there'll be other information that you will not have heard about. I guarantee it. So, we mentioned in our little news, not the newsletter, but email to people that today we're going to be talking about the mysteries of Chartres Cathedral. There are so many mysteries about Gothic cathedrals that we couldn't possibly get it all in one day. It's just impossible. There is so much to Gothic cathedrals with regards to enlightenment, with regards to even ascension. Some of the people did indeed ascend through the Gothic cathedrals. Not many, but it was possible. So there is much to talk about. Exciting, isn't it, Richard?
Indeed it is.
Yeah. I've been to Chartres several times, and the mystery and the beauty of it never ceases to amaze me. And we're going to be talking more about the mystical side of it, and not so much about how they're built or the reasons for building them. Like I said, we're going to be covering some new ground. Now, in this book, The Mysteries of Chartres Cathedral, there is something here that I saw. I saw the flagstone on the floor, but did not see the sun at the time. Because every year, on June the 21st, a ray of sun comes through a small piece of glass that does not have any colors on it. Like stained glass windows will have some sort of colors on it. Well, one of the pieces of stained glass, there is a little piece in it that is just like a regular glass. No color at all. No picture. So that on the 21st of June, a ray of sun, midday precisely, comes through this little contrived space in a stained glass window named for Saint Apollinaire, first on the western side of the transept. Now, guides talk about this a lot. People are aware of what happens, but they don't actually understand why. What was the purpose of all of this? And it's especially astonishing about a ray of sunshine that casts a spot of light on the ground in a shadowy place, like inside a cathedral, sometimes when it's dark. And the gentleman who wrote this book said he thought it was something strange when he saw this. He knew there was something behind this particular, you might say, application of glass and rays of sun and the place on the floor where this would show up, because an awful lot had to come into place to be able to do this. It had to be a particular flagstone. The flagstone was different from the rest in that it is a whiter color. You see it right away if you are looking for it. And it also has a piece of gilded metal in it, which is not in any other piece of stone on the floor. So it was really intended that people who go to the cathedral would be able to see this. And on one particular day of the year. Now, this is, well, quite interesting because it certainly wasn't an accident. A stonemason and a glazier obeyed an order. And this order was given by someone who understood all of the facts surrounding the summer solstice, because that's when this occurs, the summer solstice. Now, there's so much to tell about this. And it's even kind of hard to decide just where to start, because this particular saint has a place in the story. Also, what has a place in the story is where the Gothic Cathedral is located. It's located following a group of stars in the sky, and that is the constellation of Virgo. And so, if you see the constellation of Virgo, the individual stars, it makes a figure. And cathedrals in France follow that figure very closely. Chartres is at the very bottom of that figure of the stars of Virgo, which would mean it was the centerpiece, the opening, the beginning. And we know that so above, so below. And arrangements in the star system has a great bearing on the energy that it brings to Earth. And this particular cathedral, by where it is located, reflective of the stars of Virgo, is very important. Now we know about ley lines, and we also know, well, maybe we don't know, but in France, they didn't call them ley lines. They had a specific word for it, vouvre. What they meant by that is inside the earth, there was movement like a snake, the shape of a snake, how it would move. And these energies are greatly enhanced during certain times of the year. And what this church was telling you by that light that hit the ground on June 21st is that particular time of the year, the movement of the energy within the earth was exceptionally strong. Now, something else that I want to build up before we start getting into the depth of some of the other mysteries here is that the early Christians believed a little differently than Christians today. Their concept of a state of grace had to do with the mystical aspects of spirituality. And that's kind of hard to put your energy around and think about it, because it's not something that's taught today. But the early Christians believed this, that the state of grace meant that you knew and understood and how to work with mystical aspects of energy, vibration. And it's hard to conceive that now when we look back on the very early Christians, because so much of that information had been buried and destroyed during the different changes in the Catholic Church. So, one of the things in churches, and especially in this Gothic cathedral, is artwork that was on the walls was used as a manner of teaching people. When you think of the Middle Ages, there was a lot of people that didn't know how to read, but they knew how to sing songs, hymns, where they were taught, and they were also taught by the artwork in the on the walls, in the windows. And so Even if a person was not educated in that respect, they could learn just through being in a church. And Apollinaris filled a particular place with the early Christians. And he was known as a great healer. And that was, he healed in many ways. Matter of fact, he did some things that were very, what we would think would be very strange, because he was persecuted greatly. And when you look at some of the things that happened to him in his lifetime, the things that were done to him, how he was made to walk over a bed of coals, one of the minor things that he had to do, you wonder, how in the world did this man heal himself? So he understood a great deal about healing himself and healing others. And so putting this sign, this light, through a window next to this particular saint was giving the pilgrims a very strong message, because this particular church of Chartres was one that was put on the pilgrim route and considered very important. And of course, as you might understand, it was when you followed a schedule of the pilgrimage, you would be in this church on that particular day. The energies inside the earth would be very strong, and the energies would be coming through the star system of Virgo. And it was taught that this would be a very strong moment for enlightenment. And enlightenment then was considered being able to understand how to use vibrations, how to use healing. And this was taught to the early Christians. And then later, when the Bible was changed, later when different councils were set up, these things were considered heresy and books destroyed, because the early church didn't want people to understand this. They wanted to follow them. They wanted to be what stood between their God and the individual. And the early Christians didn't quite believe that. They believed that they could go within and understand this. Richard, are you willing to talk a little bit about going within and what that means to people, especially since you teach that?
Yes. I guess, you know, as I think Carolyn mentioned, that it's something that Yeshua is remembered for having told us to do. And really, one of the fascinating things about going within is that by going within, we effectively gain access to so much that is otherwise hidden. Most people in the world today take life to be what is visible outside them. The reality, if you will, that is exposed to the five senses. And yet, the greatest, you might say, secrets, these days anyway, for being human is really what one finds when one begins to go within, to begin to connect with other forms of consciousness, to just close your eyes and allow those doors to begin to open. And there are many, many techniques that are taught associated with this. There are many traditions in India, for example, on how one should go about this, and some of them are very formal about it, you might say, and all of those things work within that context. But really, to me, the key thing is simply to spend that time in meditation and allow the doors to gradually open. And as you do this, and as you begin to in some cases, practice-specific techniques begin to call forth other forms of consciousness, whether they be the consciousness of your physical body or your higher self or a crystal or a tree or a being on the other side, whether it be one of the masters or someone that you know that's crossed over and so on. It's just extraordinary what begins to open up. And a lot of people have trouble trusting this, and that's understandable. You know, it's certainly something that took me a while to begin to trust. And even today, as I work with these things with Carolyn quite closely, whenever it's something that's important or unusual that seems to be coming forth, I get her to validate it, you might say. So it's a journey as you begin to open up these doors, and they are doors that have been encouraged, closed, you might say, by the Catholic Church and by many other forces in the world. So beginning to open this door is just such an important part of being human, being a spiritual being on a human journey. So it's just such an important aspect of beginning to remember who and what we are.
Thank you, Richard. I appreciate you bringing that forth. I want to talk a little bit now about pilgrimage, where Chartres is located before that cathedral was built. It was actually a place that was revered by other groups of people. And that was especially a place where the Druids worked, where they worshipped. And the idea of pilgrimage was actually before Christianity. And the Druids were very much involved with that, and particularly this place. They held this place to be of very sacred ground. And so what they believed, and these people who went on pilgrimage, the early ones, that one goes in search of something that one cannot have by staying at home. One seeks the gifts of earth, something earth gives like a mother. Now, we talked about the energy, so above as below. And in these places where there were ley lines, or as the French would call it, the Wouvier, there was always water, someplace near the lines. And as you know, water carries energy. So there is a well below this particular cathedral. And through these lines, and especially when it was active, there was a great deal of energy that came up from the earth. So that was more magnetic, electromagnetic energy that came up through the earth. And on one of the spires, this well was built under one of the spires. And what came down from, you might say, from heaven or from the center of the cosmos was cosmic energy. Now, the spire attracted the cosmic energy, and from the spire down to the doorstep of the entrance where this spire is the same distance from the doorstep down to the well, which I find absolutely fascinating. And one of the things that would happen is that there was other parts that the pilgrims did before they got into the cathedral, but this was a very important place to stand under that spire in that doorway and give the energies an opportunity to come down from above to come up from below, and for most people, it would hit them at the area of the heart. This cathedral was designed to open up the heart energy. The place considered love, compassion, was very important in this whole construct. And what is interesting also is that different Gothic cathedrals are put in different places and built in such a way that it opens up different centers. So even if an individual pilgrim did not understand all of this, he or she would follow the pilgrimage, because it was set up on certain dates, and they would be in the right cathedral at the right time if they followed that particular path. And it is fascinating when you stand there that you can feel this energy. Now, something else that is interesting is the ley line that runs through Chart, that runs through that entrance doorway, also covers a lot of other area, and one area that it connects with is Egypt. It connects with the pyramid at Egypt. So the location is extremely important. And there are so many other things that we can talk about. Now, I'd like to invite anyone to call who has been to some of the sacred sites and had what we call sacred sites, and especially if you've been to Chart, and call in and tell us about your experience. And I mean, not experience as a tourist, but an experience as to what you worked with as far as the mysteries are concerned, of vibration, of intuition, what you learned along those lines. Because I think it's very important for people to understand this so that if they have an opportunity to be at a specific sacred place at a specific time, that they can prepare for it. Now, there is so much about a cathedral. It is interesting that this particular cathedral was not bombed during the Second World War because, as you can imagine, you could see it from an airplane very clearly. And the people believed that this cathedral was spared because it held one of the veils that the Blessed Mother wore. And it is a relic that is found in one of the chapels. I'm sorry, we have a persistent individual trying to get us on the phone. So, miracle upon miracle, this was saved so that we could have this today, because it played a very, very important part then, and really not so much an important time today, because of what's going to happen is even going to be more miraculous. But it did serve people from those early days of the pilgrimage down to today. The roofs. One of the things that did not survive as it was built for most of the cathedrals was the roof. The roof was made out of wood, and it had shingles on the roofs, and they were handled in such a way that energy came through and the vibration from the cosmos came through those shingles and was duplicated in such a way that the people received this great amount of energy. It helped to change their state, that they could recognize vibration understand what it meant, because they could see and hear if they were prepared. Now, the other interesting thing about cathedrals, and especially this one, there has never been one found where plans and diagrams were done, because they didn't build them that way. They put a stake in the ground and they made a circle, and they knew exactly what they were doing, and they went from there. Richard, could you address the question of these giant stones, how they could be transported?
Okay. It is interesting, and this is something which I guess has turned up not just in relation to the cathedrals, but indeed if one looks in Central and South America, or the massive blocks of stone that were used to build the pyramids and many other things. Even today, we don't have tools that or equipment that can move some of the very massive blocks that are involved in some of these locations. And it does seem that the ancients had the ability to, using vibration and other things and intention, able to move these massive blocks of stone as if they were weightless. And indeed, there's evidence that some of the Tibetan monks still know how to do this. And not only were those blocks rendered essentially weightless and moved into place, but also they became soft. And so they were readily sculpted, you might say, and indeed, if you next time you're looking at some of the hieroglyphs, I guess, or more particularly the drawings and so on that are in stone in Egypt, take a closer look at how they're expressed. If you consider the possibility that those things are actually pressed into the stone, that it was soft, it makes perfect sense when you look at them, because that is, when you look from that perspective, it very much looks like that is what was done. And those that were building these cathedrals, the Knights Templar, had that knowledge. And so they were able to build these cathedrals very quickly. So that is essentially the essence of how these large blocks of stone were moved around quickly and easily.
It is fascinating. And a lot of this, as I understand it, was done at night so people could not see how these large blocks were moved. And something of interest along, I want to pick up a point that Richard made about the Templars, because this really isn't known, I don't think. Gothic appeared after the First Crusade, and more particularly after the return in 1128 of the first 9 Knights Templar. And that is when the building started. So perhaps, Richard, you could mention a few words about those first 9 Templars and where they went and what they were doing.
Yes, it's well documented that they traveled to Jerusalem and were tunneling in the area of what was historically Solomon's temple. And it was believed they were searching for the Ark of the Covenant, which indeed is true, but they knew it was not there. Rather, what is not well known is that there was in that location a temple built in the time of Atlantis. And Solomon's temple was built on exactly the same site. And the original pillars of that Atlantean temple had important information carved into them. And so a key part of what the Templars were actually doing in Jerusalem was gathering that information from that Atlantean temple to then use in their work on many levels. This is something that is not well understood and is something that came out in the material that Carol and I took from the Templars perhaps a year ago now. So it's very fascinating. And so they returned to Europe, and indeed it really was from that point that the Knights Templar began to gather momentum in the sense that we recognize they had through those few hundred years.
Thank you, Richard. And what is fascinating about that is the fact that one of the Templars, the leader of it, the Templars actually... his house was built on a ley line. So he understood how to use it. And not only did he understand how to use it, you know, growing up there, but he got a lot of his information from that. There's a statement in here in this book, The Mysteries of Chartres Cathedral, that I find interesting. And that was... the shape of the building. And this gentleman mentions that the potency of the telluric wave attracts its maximum force in the dolmenic chambers. And that is a shape inside of the cathedral which acts like a resonant drum. So we have a lot of things going on in this cathedral. We've got energy coming down from the cosmos, and we have the energy coming up from the center of the earth. We have the shingles on top of the roofs, which act like a reed in a musical instrument. Some of the other things that was going on at that particular time, as we said, it had to be a specific time of the year to obtain the most benefit. And the other thing that was going on were the windows themselves. And if you look at windows in a Gothic cathedral, you'll notice that it's not a wide range of colors, but they were special colors because they literally took gems and ground up gems in the window itself so that the blue was sapphire. They ground up sapphires to put that in the glass. The reds, you'll see a lot of reds. Blues, reds, greens. There's a few other colors, but not many. Most of it, if you look at it, is made up of these three colors, and they were using the sapphires, the rubies, the emeralds. And enough of the stone was put into the glass-making process so that individuals would, again, receive the benefit of the vibratory rates of these particular gems. And if you look through history, gems were considered very important for changing the emotional system in the body, the brain, brain waves. If people did this and did it in a very deliberate manner, they could gain a great deal. They could be what they considered enlightened. So this enlightenment that they were looking for had to be taught. And all the pilgrims didn't have an opportunity to be taught directly, so that there were a few, again, on the inner circle that was taught and understood this. something of interest. I told you that this land was used by the Druids. And the Druids did something that was very interesting. They took a piece of wood and they carved a woman holding a child. And they had processions with this. And supposedly that same statue that the Druids had carved was used by the early Christians who went on pilgrimage, and they used this statue in some of their ceremonies before they actually walked into the church. So there is this great amount of understanding that could be taught. Also, one of the things of interest, many of the Gothic cathedrals have a design on the floor that people actually followed. And it was very intentional. They followed it with great devotion, and they walked the path of this design on the floor. Well, I had the opportunity to be with a few people. We were at Chart after hours. When the church was closed, somebody came and opened the doors for us so we could see all of this ourselves. And we walked the path inside the church, had to move away all the chairs because they had filled up the church with chairs, not realizing the power of what was happening during this experience of walking this design. And when we first walked into the cathedral, lights were not on. It was dark, as you might imagine. The sun was going down. And all that you saw at first was the votive lights. And I have to tell you, it made such an impression upon me to go into this darkened alcove and be greeted by all of these votive lights because they were in red glass containers. And you could see all of these flames flickering in the red glass containers. It made such an impression on me. And then when we walked inside of the church and you followed the design, the pattern that was in the floor, you automatically faced rose windows when you made a curve. And the rose windows are so beautiful with their, as I said, the blues, the reds, the greens, knowing that this was special glass, knowing it was special gemstones ground up in this glass. And the sun was setting, and it came through these rose windows in such brilliance. And you would take a couple steps, and you would face one of the windows, and then take a few other steps, turning in a direction in this pattern, facing other rose windows. I have to tell you, it was so remarkable. If a person could not or had not learned how to meditate, they certainly, in my opinion, would reach that state by just walking those lines, facing those energies, being imbued with those gemstones. It is quite an experience. Unfortunately, it is not something that many people know. Isn't that an amazing sense of what you feel when you think of that, Richard?
Truly, it's extraordinary the knowledge and wisdom and understanding that's encoded in those cathedrals on so many levels, and most of it is these days lost. And if it's not lost, it's guarded very preciously, you might say, by very few. It's quite sad, really. But hopefully those doors will be opened again.
I hope so. And it's my little effort here to help people awaken to this, because each sacred site, whether It is in Egypt or some of the other countries that have their own sacred sites. And every one of the Gothic cathedrals, they all have their story. And it is a beautiful story. And most of these places, as far as I know, follow the same pattern. These esoteric understandings of what exists in the world. At this point, Richard, do you feel comfortable enough talking a little bit about the background energy?
You mean the background energy behind everything?
Yeah, that's it. That's the one.
That one.
That one.
Yes, exactly what did you want me to bring out, Carolyn? There's a lot of ground. You mean how it relates to this in some level or just in a broader
just
sense?
Just in general, because I don't think that's – I think that's something that did play a piece in the Gothic cathedrals, but it plays a piece on so many levels that, again, I don't think people realize just what it means. And maybe you can share some of this with them.
Sure, I'd be happy to. I would say most people would consider that space is empty. That is, there's nothing there. And nothing could be further from the truth. Those of you who have some familiarity with the amazing work, at least I consider amazing, of Nassim Haramein, who's kind of like a self-taught physicist, you might say, has learned his physics outside of the mainstream academic world, has demonstrated in his work that the density of the background energy contained in a proton, that is one of the particles that makes up the nucleus of an atom, that the density of that energy in the proton is equal to the total known mass and energy of the cosmos. Think about that for a moment. That's huge. And so this is the energy density that applies throughout all space, throughout all the volume, if you will, of the cosmos. And so when you realize this, then you begin to realize that actually what we see and, in a sense, experience is such a minuscule aspect of the background energy which exists. And all that we see arises from that background energy. You may also be aware that reality as we see it, as we experience it, including our physical bodies, switches on and off millions of times per second. So you might say this reality as we experience it is coming forth from that background energy field, kind of in a form of a standing wave that is held in place and switches on and off. So the power of this background energy is truly quite extraordinary, and one of the skills, as we understand it, that will come forth for all of humanity that participate in the ascension process, once we have passed through that, is that we will gather the ability to bring forth whatever we choose in a physical sense from that background energy. So we can just, for example, imagine an apple in our hand, and lo and behold, there it is. And so as you begin to reflect on that, you don't need someone to come and build you a house. You simply imagine it into being. And once you've finished with something, you can imagine it out of being. Solves the problem of waste disposal.
I like that.
But it's quite fascinating. And so as that emerges, our requirements to go to work, if you will, for somebody else or in your own business to generate the money necessary to get the basic things of life, that whole process simply dissolves because you don't need it anymore. Because once you learn how to do this, to learn how to bring forth from the background energy field anything that you choose, then there is no need to work in that sense. That doesn't mean there won't be things that we will all wish to do to occupy our times, to be, in a sense, productive and stimulated and so on. There'll be many things. But it won't be work in the sense of generating the money necessary for survival. So it's interesting notion. And all of that is made possible because of this background energy from which all is expressed, all creation comes forth. So it's an interesting notion to begin to understand the power of this. And some of you may have received an email from me referring to the work of M.T. Keshe, an Iranian who is currently working in Belgium, has an operation in Belgium, where he's working with what he calls the plasma contained within a proton or an electron, and has learned how to open that up and bring forth so many things, bring forth effectively unlimited energy. And if you can tap into this background energy field, the whole notion of a shortage of energy simply becomes a nonsense. And this whole game that's been played for the last 100 years, where we've been dependent upon oil and even been persuaded that there is a limit to the amount of energy that's available, will all just dissolve as the facade that it truly is. So I don't know quite where you wanted me to go with that, Carol.
No, I like where you are. I think it was great. It's opening up people's minds to what is possible. And that basically was one of the things that I wanted to do with this show. Richard, you talked about the email that you sent out, and we don't have much time, maybe 5 minutes. I'd just like for you to lead people to our websites and how they could receive some of these emails that you send out that has so much really wonderful information in it.
Yes, the simplest way to do that is to go to our main website, the2012countdown.com, which has in and of itself a tremendous amount of information there that we've posted over time. And you will find a place at the top and bottom of every page on that website where you can enter your name and email address, and then you will receive an email which you just click on the link to join our list, and you will receive those emails. Very simple process. So if you're not already on that list, you may wish to do that and join us a little more actively.
And there, like, as you say, there is so much on that website. Would you give people who maybe haven't been to the website a few thoughts as to what they might find if they go there?
Oh, my goodness. There is information, for example, about what we have been given in terms of the process that is necessary to prepare for ascension, the understanding that we've been given, at least. You'll also find a page there which has all of the recordings of these radio shows. And there's another page where I've put selected YouTube videos which provide, in a sense, an overview of the basic understandings that Carolyn and I have been given in our work. So, and there's another page where we were gathering the various messages we were being given about various the solstices and the equinoxes and the full moons and so on over a couple of years. So there's a lot of information about health, about some understandings about who and what the dark is and what they've been about, some information about Atlantis, many things. I lose track of it. There's a lot on there.
It truly is. And I'd like for you just to mention, we've got like maybe 5 minutes, just mention some of the things that's on the shop page that people might be able to, I mean, all the things you talk about, there's no cost to it, but there's a few things that does have a cost. That's on the page where the shop is.
Sure. Well, one of the things that's there is a collection of Carolyn's wonderful ebooks that she has brought forth from many sources. There's Earth History that she brought forth from Archangel Michael maybe, what, 5, 6 years ago now, Carolyn?
Yeah, been a while.
And there is the series of ebooks that we have been given by Steve Fawcett. But that collection from Carolyn is really quite extraordinary. There's some amazing material there. And if you haven't gone and looked at those, her conversations with Caesar, which is quite fascinating, is because Carolyn has come to understand that she was Caesar's daughter in that lifetime and has recalled some extraordinary experiences from that time. And indeed, Caesar and I've forgotten her name. What were you in? Who were you
Julia,
in that life?
Julia.
Julia has come forth and shared a lot of what it was like in that lifetime for her, and so on. So
that was
there are many
scary story because I was in Rome, which brought all that forth.
It was indeed.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And we have 3 minutes, Richard.
And so there are also a series of recordings which represent the first part, if you will, of what we call the Soul Journey of Yeshua, which is a series of some 10 or so recordings up there, some initial lessons from Yeshua that he began to give us, and work that we have so far yet not been able to finish because of the interference that Carolyn has been suffering. But that doesn't in any manner detract from the material which is there. It's just as valid now as it was a couple of years ago when we recorded that incredible material. So there's a tremendous amount of material which is available there if you go and have a look in the shopping page.
Yeah, and a lot of people like Yeshua's newsletter.
Indeed. Indeed, there is a page on the website which explains that newsletter and gives you access to it. There's also a page there for Carolyn's Key Past Life sessions. Tremendous amount of material there. The Yeshua's newsletters have certainly struck a chord with many people. And so you can go to that page and you can subscribe to Yeshua then and now. And if you choose, you can get the first three for free and just allow those to come through to you every couple of weeks, or you can move forward more quickly and subscribe, and those three will just be sent to you, and also the fourth one will follow along pretty quickly. So the material that's coming forth in those, where basically Carolyn has received an enormous number of questions from our listeners and readers, and Yeshua is answering those questions, and some of the answers are quite fascinating. They really are amazing, and some of them you might think you know what the answer is, and yet the perspective that comes forth from Yeshua always carries surprises, always new insights, always new angles that we hadn't considered. It's fascinating material, I think.
And how he felt about things.
Indeed, very much so. So that's called Yeshua Then and Now, and as I said, there is a page there that gives you access to that also.
And in 1 minute, do you think you could just tell people how wonderful your ebook is?
Well, what can I say? Yes, I was drawn maybe 3 years ago now to write an ebook called The Coming Golden Age and How to Prepare for It. And it's very interesting because some of you will be aware that my background is a scientific one. I have a PhD in engineering, was very much a left-brain guy who finished up walking a path where I found my left brain wouldn't work at all for me. It really forced me to open up my intuitive side over a decade, I suppose. It was pretty difficult time at the time. And part of what I was prompted to do was really, in a way, build a path for those who are very much stuck in this left brain world, if you will, and are not aware of what science really tells us about the nature of things that is very, very different from how we, for the most part, perceive the world based on what we're told about it. So it's very interesting as you start to look at some of these things, because the picture that science actually tells us about the nature of our reality is very, very different. And so it's really building a bridge in understanding for people who have been in that left brain place to begin to see that there's a lot more going on, and to indeed, in a sense, build a bridge to understanding that indeed there is a golden age on our doorstep.
Well, Richard, this has been great sharing time with you and our audience, and it's time for us to say goodbye.
Well, thank you once again, Carolyn, for a very interesting show, and thank all of you for joining us tonight, and see you next time.
Yes, and thank you, Richard, for your beautiful self. Goodbye for now.